Welcome to the Wild and Free podcast, episode 71. I'm Ainsley Arment, and this week we're talking with our good friend Amber Johnston of Heritage Mom Blog, all about creating healthy, life-giving rhythms and the importance of mothers planning time to play.
I matter, and my excitement and enthusiasm about whatever it is I'm pursuing at that time, it exists within the realm of my family, but it also exists for Amber, the woman.
Toni Weber shares some heartwarming letters she received from her children after completing 33 years of homeschooling. Plus, the new Earth Bundle for the month of April is available right now. We'll tell you what's inside. So grab a cup of coffee and join us on the front porch. Let's get started. Marianne Evans, who went by the pen name George Eliot, once wrote, "We could never have loved the earth so well if we had had no childhood in it." There's a reason why childhood experiences are best remembered outdoors. The smell of dirt and air in our lungs, the soft tickle of tall grasses in a field, the breeze sweeping our hair sideways, the prickles of sweet gumball in our hands, the velvety feel of a lamb's ear in the garden. Nature is a gift. A balm, a healer. It needs no purpose to exist other than pleasure, and yet it provides so much more. It is sustenance to our souls and is medicine to our minds. Every sensory experience of being outdoors awakens our senses and stimulates our nervous systems, priming our minds to learn and our bodies to regulate. Our children especially need this while growing. Crawling in the grass, climbing trees, rolling down hills, and swinging on branches. The activities of childhood aren't just important for happiness, but also for their health. Without daily contact with nature, their capacity to learn, grow, and thrive as human beings is greatly diminished. The term neoteny means having childlike features, which, unlike any other creature, humans have the capacity to exhibit throughout their entire lives. In the same way, we don't ever outgrow our capacity for childlike wonder. And if we lose it, we need only to go outdoors and rediscover it in the extraordinary world around us. Author and educator Dr. Carla Hannaford wrote, "To know our relationship to the earth is more compelling than our need for food, touch, or even the mother-child bond. The earth is full of wonders. The earth is our teacher and classroom. The earth is our hospital and home." Friends, our new content bundle for the month of April is called Earth, and it's available right now. It's packed full of articles, tutorials, handcrafts, and stories meant to reawaken your desire to give your kids a childhood in nature. When you subscribe this week, you'll get immediate access to the Earth Bundle, but you'll also get access to last month's Heritage Bundle, and we'll put a welcome kit in the mail that includes your first monthly magazine. To learn more and sign up, go to bewildandfree.org/bundles. Toni Weber recently completed 33 years of homeschooling. To celebrate this momentous occasion, her children presented her with a journal filled with letters about what being homeschooled meant to them. It's the stuff of every homeschool mama's dreams. Here's what they wrote.
"Dear Mommy, when I think about what it means to have been homeschooled, it's hard to articulate a concise statement which fulfills all it touches in my heart. It brings up more than an education, because the sacrifice of wholehearted motherhood to spend the last 32 years, 33, at home gave us so much more than that. It gave us the foundation to build a life on. You nurtured a haven, not sheltered from real life, but a garden, painstakingly tended, tending young minds, allowing each one of us to grow into our unique personalities while having the patience to not discourage with harsh words or shame with quick laughter or choke dreams that seem far from reality, to selflessly speak truth and continue to call out the good when correction would have been easier, to lift up and encourage us to be who we were made to be. Who can know a mother's heart for her children? Who can measure the worth of a woman who lays down her life each day and sleepless night only to rise and do the same again? Dear Mamo, when I try to think of what homeschooling meant to me, it's hard for me to think of something specific. After staring confused at the paper for an hour, I finally realized why. My school life and childhood were one and the same. The good times, the hard times were all spent together each day with the family all around. There were no bullies to deal with. There wasn't any teachers too busy to help. And recess was hard to tell apart from class. I made it through those most vulnerable years with the support and encouragement of the people who loved me most in the world. But by far the greatest single gift homeschooling has given me is the incredible relationship with my siblings and parents. I value my family more than any other earthly thing. I can't imagine a life where my siblings are not my closest friends and my parents are not my constant refuge. Dear Mamo, first of all, there is no way that I could put into words or ever show how much I appreciate what you have done for me and the family. Secondly, I just want to thank you for sparing me from having to ride the bus. Not only was I able to be around my brothers and sister and form loving bonds with them that are lasting our whole lives, but to be able to have all that extra time with two of my favorite and most cherished humans on earth, you and Dad. You have taught me to be kind. You have taught me to be patient. You have taught me to laugh and dance like crazy and not care who knows it. Congratulations on accomplishing a task few moms would dare start. In true homeschool style, I'm sure most of this is misspelled. But what isn't misspelled is the honesty of what I wrote. Where to start? To have a conversation on homeschooling in simply academic terms is entirely missing the point. The curated learning, the one-on-one attention, moving quickly when things came easily, and taking care when things were difficult, these are all the secondary reasons someone would choose to homeschool. The values I hold dear and the things in life that matter most to me are all because of the time and care you and Dad put into my life, because you were in my life. Thank you so much for everything. I love you more than you will ever know. The story isn't over when they graduate. Not by a long shot. It'll keep evolving every year of their life. You will obviously still be a mother to those beautiful children, although it will look different than it does now. They will still need you to cheer them on, to be enthusiastic listeners, to encourage their dreams, and to be a faithful friend. All the good and lovely things that you are pouring into them right now, they're going to continue to bring them life and take on deeper meaning than they can appreciate right now. You guys are all my heroes. I believe so much in what you're doing, and I will always, always be your biggest fan. Who can know a mother's heart for her children? Who can measure the worth of a woman who lays down her life each day and sleepless night only to rise and do the same again?
Amber Johnston lives in Georgia, nestled among pine trees, hammocks, and zip lines with her husband and their four children. Her happy place is the back porch on a rainy day, preferably with a giant mug of hot tea and a good book. And although she was raised in the air conditioning, somehow the woods are where she feels most at home these days. When they have the chance, her family enjoys extended world schooling trips to immerse themselves in other cultures. Amber blogs about adding multicultural mirrors and windows to a traditional Charlotte Mason education at heritagemom.com. She recently sat down with Jennifer Pepito to talk about creating healthy, life-giving rhythms and the importance of mothers planning time to play. Let's listen in.
It's great to have this opportunity to chat with you. I thought it'd be fun to chat a little bit about setting goals and even in a way how goal setting relates to mama culture. And let me preface that by saying, I think that sometimes as homeschool moms, we can feel like our whole lives have to revolve around our children. And anything outside of that is peripheral, not important. You know, Julie Bogart talks a lot about basically, if we're not excited about life and learning, it's going to be hard for us to translate excitement to ourselves. And one lesson that I'm learning that has actually been a little bit painful is that our kids aren't going to be around forever. And so if we center our whole goals, our whole identity, everything in our children without, you know, reading books for ourselves or making a goal of some new skill we want to learn, at the end of the day, we might be a little bit underdeveloped or even a little sad because we're raising our children so that they can go off and pursue their own goals. They're not always going to be our focus.
No, I think that's so true. And it's one of the things that I'm thankful that even from the very beginning of my motherhood journey, I was open to hearing from mothers that were further along than me. I wanted to hear from them. And even though I sometimes couldn't quite believe what they were telling me, I chose to act as if I believed it anyway, because I trusted them. And that's one of the things that I've heard so many times, that you want to make sure that you are giving and opening doors for your children and nurturing them in your home. But at the same time, you are a separate person. And you have to make sure you don't completely lose your identity in the midst of mothering. So I've been thinking, sometimes it's easier than others. Newborn times, I'm lost. I'm lost in it. I don't have an identity at that time, it feels like. But in between those times, I think working to maintain a sense of wonder and excitement about your own journey helps you to be a better mother and enjoy what you're doing more.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's so important, like you said, to recognize that there are seasons in our life, because, you know, the newborn season, we really have to be all in. And I think that in that season, having too many goals could just be sort of defeating, because our, you know, children, newborns, infants, toddlers are so consuming. They really need so much of us. And so if we had a bunch of big goals for business in that season, we might just end up feeling like a sense of defeat because of it. But if we can realize that, you know, I'm working towards something, I'm working towards developing my children and myself, and maybe it's not all going to happen in this one season, but there is going to be a time where I can set some goals for myself.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think one of the things that's helped me a lot is the idea of making lists, because when I can put something down on a list, whether it's something that I'm thinking I'll work on right now or something that I can say, I admire this, but I don't have a path to pursue it right now, but it's something I'm going to surrender for the moment, but I'm going to come back to, and I can write it on that list. And I feel like I'm not giving up on it, but I'm just saying that I don't have a place for it in the season that I'm in right now. And, but by writing it down, it makes me feel like I'm not giving up. I'm just waiting for that one. So I think, list making has helped me to prioritize which goals are realistic and what I should be focused on for this season.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. One of the things that I do every year, actually in January, is I set goals in several different areas. And so sometimes I'll be kind of brainstorming through the year, you know, where are maybe place I want to go, or what is a financial goal I have, or what's a book that I want to read? Because I'll even make goals for what books I want to read, or how many books I want to read, or I'll make goals for a new skill I want to learn. And so, you know, in my planning season, you know, there might be a section where I have personal development goals, and it might be to learn sourdough or flower arranging. And then there would be a reading goal. You know, last year I wanted to read Life of the Beloved by Henry Nouwen. And, you know, so even if it's a single book and I'm going to read 10 other books, at least having some of these things written down helps me get to them. But when you're making these lists, how do you remember them? Like, I'm a list maker, but sometimes I have so many notebooks and journals going that the lists get lost.
Okay, so I have a master journal, and it's, you know, you could call it a dumping ground. I call it a parking lot. So I do have other journals and notebooks and lists here and there, and sometimes I misplace them. I have notes on my phone, but this master journal, it's something like I imagine it'll be a part of my life forever. And it's where I write down the real nitty gritty. Once I put it there, it's done. It's good as done. And so I make a kind of draft when I'm planning my goals for the year. And then once I've solidified and I feel good about it, I move it to my master journal. And I think that some of the things you mentioned, things I want to read or places I want to go, or some of the things that I think about. I also think about traditions. You know, I read once that the things you want your children to look back on as adults and remember are the things that are happening in the days that you're living in right now. And so if I want them to have fond memories of seasonal traditions or holidays or the way that they're celebrated or things we commemorate. So I think about that in the beginning of the year too. What do I want to do in that arena? And also hospitality. It's where I start thinking, who do we want to have over? I know it's a little bit different right now with COVID, but normally it's in January where I'm sitting with my husband talking about, do we want to host Friendsgiving, you know, for Thanksgiving like we did in such and such year? Or who would we like to invite from out of town for a long visit? They can stay in the basement apartment, things like that. I feel like it's a great time to just really think through the rhythm of the year and how I see it flowing for my family.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. We did the same thing last year. I have a big year at a glance calendar that I hang on my wall in the hallway. It's kind of expensive. It's from Schoolhouse Electric, but it is a really helpful year at a glance for me so that I can write out, you know, any travel plans go on there, any birthdays, so that I don't overwhelm myself. Because I think sometimes when we're scheduling out our year and setting goals for the year and we're looking at a month at a time, we can get overzealous and then end up with this a year that's not sustainable. And one of our, you know, big family values is minimalism and margin and time for people. So I love that you actually kind of map out, you know, November and January.
Yeah, definitely. Because I want to, it's important to me. And it's something that my husband and I share. We both love to entertain. We both love to, for our home to be a place that people want to come. But if we find that if we don't plan it in advance and at least have an idea of when we're going to make the invitations, that things get cluttered up and you end up looking and saying, we don't have any free weekends that month, or we don't want to use all of the free weekends, to your point about margin and having white space. So, you know, I feel like those are kind of some of the big picture ideas when I'm looking at the year. And then you have the tactical things, parts of homemaking, the cooking and cleaning and even the seasonal decorating. I feel that for me, I have to be really intentional about that. Otherwise, it just comes and goes. Oh, I'll do it next week. I mean, we hit Christmas, but I really like to decorate and put things up for the spring and the fall and other little times throughout the year to help make our home feel special or look special. It always feels special, but to look special. And so I'll plan that out as well. And, you know, meal planning, whatever I'm going to do, I do something different there every year, I feel like. But whatever it is I'm going to try to tackle that year, I find that January is a great place for a fresh start.
I love that. And it's interesting because I think that part of what helps us go on as people, especially when we're in a difficult season, is having some goals. You know, whether it's a goal for what you're going to, you know, what you're going to do next month, a field trip you're going to take, a handcraft you're going to do with your children, a book you're going to read. It's almost like setting ourselves up to have something to look forward to.
Oh, I love that. And I feel like that's as much for the children as it is for me. And, you know, this is kind of unrelated, but hopefully I'll bring it back around. But one time I was talking to my mom and she said something, you know, about me being excited about something. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I only really care about the children being excited. And she said, well, you're my child and I care about you being excited. And I was like, oh, wow. I hadn't thought of myself in that role, but yeah, I matter. And my excitement and enthusiasm about whatever it is I'm pursuing at that time, it exists within the realm of my family, but it also exists for Amber, the woman.
That's so lovely, Amber. What a mother to, that's really a precious testimony about your mom, because, you know, I think that sometimes as children, we can get the idea that our parents just want to see us succeed and they don't necessarily care at all about us enjoying life or being happy. And it's sweet that your mom cared the same way that you care about your kids.
Yeah, it helped me be a little more vulnerable in that moment to think of myself as her daughter rather than just my children's mother. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah. So how has thinking of yourself as a daughter inspired some of your own goals?
Well, I think that, I originally spent so much of my time thinking of my children's playtime or free space or margin, however you want to say that, and what exciting things they're going to plan for the year. But now one of my pages in my journal is Mama Play. And it's related to mother culture, but some of it's just pure fun. And I'll look and see, what do I want to do this year? Whether it's a weekend away with girlfriends, if it's early Saturday mornings at the coffee shop, which I love to go by myself and I have my favorite chair and I'm just planning to sit there for hours because my family's not even awake yet. And whatever brings me joy that I want to mark down as something important for the year. And it seems like it's not that big a deal, even now while I'm saying it to you. But in the early years of motherhood for me, I didn't feel that I should take that time. Why should I be thinking about that? Like, I made the decision to have children and now I'm a mother and I have to put aside my playtime. I already had it. And so it's been new for me in recent years to think of myself as needing to play.
Yeah. And I think that it's so good for us as moms to take a step back sometimes and just enjoy ourselves. My kids last night, my husband was playing soccer, like they were tossing a soccer ball around in my house. It's a little scary, but there was just so much laughter and joy. And I thought, oh man, I mean, in intense days, in days when, you have other concerns or big global concerns, it's so important for us to find things to laugh about and some enjoyment, even if it's something simple, like you say, going to the coffee shop by yourself for a little while.
Yeah, definitely. I remember reading this little proverb that said, change of work is as good as play. And I was thinking, oh, who did that? Where did that come from? And it was a 1825 issue of the Christian Gleaner and Domestic Magazine. And I just kind of mulled over that for a while. Change of work is as good as play. And I started applying that to my goal setting, thinking that in some ways there are times where I can't just not work or not do certain things. Those are my responsibilities. But how can I change them in order to bring enthusiasm to the experience again? Or to create some type of joy around the method that I'm choosing to pursue. And I think that's been something that's been fun for me as well.
We'll be back with Amber and Jen in just a moment, but I wanted to take a moment to tell you about the Wild and Free membership community. As homeschooling mothers, we can gather for events, retreats, and even local meetups throughout the year. But how can we stay connected with this life-giving tribe day to day? The Wild and Free membership community is where we encourage each other, share our stories, and learn from those who have gone before us. It's where we find courage and peace in this homeschooling journey. Each month, you'll find thoughtful guidance for homeschooling children of all ages. Our content bundles are filled with inspirational articles, nature journaling, tutorials.
Hey guys, it's Kristen Rogers.
Gouache has a larger pigment ratio, making it a heavier paint.
Handcrafts and exclusive podcasts with special guests.
Thank you so much for joining today, Avital. I really appreciate you sharing.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the Wild and Free community.
When you sign up to be a Wild and Free member, you not only get access to the current bundle, But you'll also receive the previous month's bundle, a library of online resources, and all the recordings from the past conferences.
That's what you bring to the table.
Plus, we'll send you a welcome kit with your first copy of the monthly Wild and Free magazine. And when you sign up for an annual membership, we'll give you 2 months free. You can also gift a Wild and Free membership to a friend or loved one by going to the Give as a Gift link on the sign-up page. There's no better time to become part of this cherished community that holds each other up on this journey of motherhood. We may not all homeschool the same way, but we are not alone, and we are in this together. Now back to Amber Johnston and Jennifer Pepito.
That's so smart. It's interesting because the book Rhythms of Renewal by Rebecca Lyons, she kind of has a worksheet that goes with that, where you look at different areas of your life and sort of evaluate what's working here. You know, what's working with my morning routine? What's not working? Okay, so maybe I need to add in some time to read in the morning or some time to exercise in the morning. And then what's working in my, you know, in my homeschool? What's not working? So maybe a goal would be to sort of problem solve there, but taking time before you set the goals, like you say, to evaluate what do I love, what's working, can help us refine what we actually want to do.
Definitely. And I love the freedom also in saying that something's not working and I'm not even going to bother to fix it. Rather than changing anything that I'm doing, I'm going to change my mindset. I'm going to remove that thing from my goals. You know, maybe it's something that was a goal last year or something I think I should be doing, but can never quite get to it. And I start to become, you know, to start to think about or wonder, will it bring more joy to me and my family if we release that rather than trying to fix it?
Oh, that's really good. That's so wonderful. So, you know, like you say, I mean, not everything can be changed. Not every goal is necessarily achievable for us. I'm never going to have skinny ankles. I've come to that conclusion. And so there are certain things that are unchangeable about us. And so learning to love and accept those parts of us or those parts of our lives that maybe we have no power to change is a really important part of goal setting as well.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, you know, I have to talk to myself about these things sometimes to talk myself off a ledge. But I often tell myself, like, I have to accept that I'm flawed and I'm bound by limits. And some of those limits are universal for all of us. And some of those limits are individual to me. There may be other friends or people I see online or in my real life that I admire, but that's just not something that's going to come as easily for me as it may for them. And I can only do so much. And so I'm trying now in this season to think about, in the midst of all the doing, am I experiencing the moments that are adding up to these days and years? I don't want to spend all of my time just stretching to achieve. Sometimes I want to just sit and be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important. I think that it can get, you know, and I think that's personality wise, because I know there are certain personalities who, you know, the goal setting is like anathema. They don't even think about it. And they maybe could rouse themselves to make a goal. And then there's other personalities that I would probably throw into that second one. I start goal setting like on December 26th. I mean, completely forget to take a full few days to just read a book and kick back and get right into goal setting. And for people like myself, it's probably important to take a chill pill and just relax a little bit. Take time. And I think the problem with goal setting before you've taken time to reflect is that often the goals are not really what are life-giving or based on what we love. They might be, you know, and I think that part of what needs to happen in some ways is that we just keep growing as humans, because when we know ourselves better, then we can know, oh, I'm not setting goals and I should be, or I'm setting unrealistic goals for myself, or maybe I'm setting too many goals.
I agree. And I think for me, what happens when I don't take the moment to sit back and just be for a little bit is that I call it goal setting, but what I've really just done is moved my to-do list over. and call it goal setting. And that's something that's very different. I mean, we all have things that we need to do, but the to-do list is very tactical. And my goal setting, I'm looking for something that's bigger and broader than that. So looking for something that's more big picture and strategic that my to-do list will flow from rather than be driven by.
Yes, that is so smart, so insightful. So in some ways, really, if we were going to, in this podcast, give people some suggestions for how to make goals, it would almost be wise to take a day to just like go play or go sit by a river or, you know, take a day to just put aside goal setting and take time to think and ponder and maybe read poetry that you love or read a book that you love or even watch a movie you love to sort of stir up desire.
Oh, yes. And inspiration. I completely agree with that. And it's it reminds me recently, my kids were doing this little competition thing with their homeschool group, and they had 5 minutes to build a tower. And they started going vertical right away, and the tower failed. They weren't ever really able to do anything with it. And when they got done, I said, "What did you guys forget?" And they said, "Oh, we forgot to build a base." And I'm like, you forgot to build a base. You went straight vertical and you had no base. It had nothing to rest on. And I thought about that in terms of goal setting. You know, when you jump right into it and you're just thinking vertical, like I want to do more, make it better, achieve or in any category whatsoever. But you never took a moment to just build a base from which to grow. And the same thing's going to happen. The tower will topple over, which has happened to me multiple times. So I grow from those experiences, but it's nice if I can avoid them too.
I love that. I think that maybe we should start a hashtag slow goal movement. Like, yeah. You know, it's interesting because there's the whole slow food movement that has been very transformative for a lot of people. And there could be a case for learning to make goals and be a, you know, an intentional and growth minded person, but who's also making intentional goals instead of just trying to build a tower with no foundation.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think so. Also considering, I think I have my personal goals, but then I have a long view of the type of family that I want my children to say they came from and our family culture that we're building. So when I'm blowing out my personal goals, I do have to take a second and say, does this align with the vision I have for my family? Or am I thinking only in a silo that isn't really connected to the long-term plan? So I think there are so many different angles and areas. I feel that energizes me to be able to come at these things from all these different areas, kind of like an octopus, you know, stretching my tentacles. But for some people, if that's overwhelming to be like, well, in this podcast, they've talked about this and this and this. I think just coming back and looking at what's working and what's not working as a simple starting place is a great way to kind of determine where you want to go from here.
Yeah. And I definitely affirm what you said about having a global picture, though, because I think that, you know, if we don't sort of have a long range, I know Read Aloud Revival, Sarah McKenzie talks about, she talks about the 20-year school plan. You know, what do you want your kids to look back on? And if we don't sort of have a long view of what we are going towards, it's going to make it hard for us to set yearly or monthly goals, because we're sort of just shooting in the dark. But if we have something that we ultimately are aiming for, whether it's a simple life or a, you know, academic life or a musical life or a creative life, if we have some kind of a long view, it's going to make it easier for us to make those short-term goals.
Absolutely. And I've redirected sometimes my goal setting based on looking at that and saying, you know what, this looks really good, but it really doesn't align with my 20-year plan. I like that. Part of my plan is I want my home to be a refuge, like to feel like a place of safety and shelter for my children and others who are in it. But for a while there, I think I was headed toward creating more of a museum, you know, a home that was so beautiful and delicate that it could be admired, but it didn't really feel like a place you'd want to stay or come back.
You wouldn't want to kick a soccer ball around in there.
No, you wouldn't. Not at all. And I had to intentionally say, like, it's nice and it's it and it's pretty. And I don't just mean aesthetically pretty. I mean, it's pretty emotionally, but it's not a place where you kind of feel like you want to take your shoes off and kick the ball around. It's not a place you can fall asleep on the couch in front of the fireplace. And again, I don't just mean physically, but emotionally as well. So I was like, man, I got to redirect some things here because I have an end game that I really love, but my goal setting isn't aligning with that.
So. Yeah. I can't believe we're out of time. I've loved chatting with you about this, and I wish we could sit down for coffee and set goals together, but
someday.
I'm sure that the Wild and Free community is going to enjoy and learn from this episode.
Awesome. It was great.
Thanks for joining.
Yep.
Thanks, Amber. Friends, don't forget about the new Earth Bundle that's available on the Wild and Free website right now. It was lovingly curated by this beautiful community of homeschooling mothers, mud pie manufacturers, and memory makers, just for you. You'll learn how to make a weather temperature scarf, a homemade rain gauge, and clay planter pots, among other handcrafts. You'll hear an exclusive podcast with Sally Clarkson and get a lesson in backyard foraging. You'll discover the importance of grounding and learn how to make a cardboard nature display, plus so much more. There are dozens of downloadable resources in the Earth Bundle that are sure to fill your home with nature goodness all month long. To learn more, visit bewildandfree.org/bundles. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next time for the Wild and Free podcast.